Good morning, everyone. It's the third Thursday. That means Kathy Carpenter is here. She is a master gardener. That means she's taken specialized training from the University of Illinois to know a little bit about all things that are plant and plant-related, flowers, shrubs, your lawn. And it's so funny. Last month, we had fall-like weather. The leaves were starting to turn. Trees were, you know, starting to turn. Everything was really kind of chilly. Now, here we are with Indian summer, as they call it, back in full force. My goodness, today's high is going to be up near 94 degrees with a heat index of 100. So it's kind of interesting that we're going to be talking about getting your yard and your garden ready for fall. But eventually fall will arrive, and it officially arrives, I guess, on Friday afternoon. But I don't think Quincy got the memo or any area around here. So welcome back to the show, Kathy Carpenter. Yes. Always glad to have you here once a month. Uh-huh. One of the things that I found interesting, I was watching a show about living up in Alaska in the frozen Northland and how people survive up there. And there was a woman up there who's a beekeeper. Now, she has to get her bees fresh every year. She has to go down and get some worker bees and a fresh queen from Seattle, Washington, because they can't overwinter where she is. But she has a thriving honey business because there's so many, with 24 hours a day, almost 24 hours a day of sunshine up there, everything grows.
Oh, yeah.
And so I found that kind of fascinating. You want to talk a little bit today about bees,
yes,
and pollinators.
Yes. Mostly, I wanted, did you know that one of our native bees is the first bee ever to be put on the endangered species list? It's actually an eastern bee. It's called the rusty-patched bumblebee.
The rusty-patched bumblebee.
Exactly.
It's endangered.
And it is endangered. They're not really sure exactly what's causing its decline, but it probably has to do with the fact that it doesn't have, there's not enough flowers around for it to visit. They are a native bee, so they are less noticeable than some, like our big, honeybees, of course, who are non-native. And they are a solitary, pretty much a solitary bee. In other words,
they don't live in a hive. With
they
all the
do not
ones?
Live in a hive. They nest in the ground.
Okay.
And they are they're trying to encourage farmers to actually make their fields more bee friendly by planting like 5% of their cropland in flowers, mostly native flowers, and shielding, having like a buffer strip,
right,
that will separate those flowers from their crops, which they usually have to put pesticides
and herbicides
on,
yeah,
them, right. So and then also allowing a little areas that these are ground nesting bees, so the bees need to have a place where they can kind of burrow into the ground and mm-hmm. lay their eggs and that sort of thing.
But they have to be close to a source of nectar, obviously.
Nectar
now,
and pollen,
bees,
yes.
Do these bees make honey?
They do not. They are bumblebees. Bumblebees don't do honey at all.
They just sting
and in
you.
Fact, the only bees that really make honey are the non-native honeybees.
Yeah.
And they're good pollinators, but they're not as good at pollinating our native species of plants as they are, you know, going to things like okay. apple orchards and that sort of thing to get
so
their honey.
Obviously bees, and not just honeybees, are critical. I would love to go out to Edgewood Orchards this time of year.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine they depend on
honeybees.
That,
I'm sure they do.
To pollinate mm-hmm. out there. When you talk about this out in the east, this rusty whatever it is, bumblebee.
Rusty patch bumblebee.
Mm-hmm. What kind of, are any of our local bees, what kind of bumblebees do we have here, and are any of them endangered? And what can we do to increase them?
Well, they are not as critically endangered, obviously, as the rusty patch. And the rusty patch is an eastern bee, actually more like a north and eastern bee, but it does exist in Illinois.
Okay.
In the northern part of Illinois. We also have, there were a lot of other bumblebees, native bumblebees, that the ones, the big black and yellow ones, are
the
most
obvious. Yeah,
the
black and yellow striped ones.
Right.
And they're really big and fat as opposed to a honeybee, which is kind of smaller, petite.
Yeah. Well, they're basically oriented towards getting pollinating. Well, not necessarily pollinating, although many bumblebees do collect pollen, which then gets fed to their young.
Okay.
They make a pollen ball, lay the egg on it, and, you know.
So they skip the honey phase, but they do feed their young the
pollen.
They just don't make
honey.
And,
of course, they pollinate plants.
Right.
The plants are kind of smart that way, you know. They give a little.
Give a little to get a little.
To get a little,
couldn't
yeah.
we all
exactly.
do that? We'd all get along a little better, yeah.
Probably so. But there are about 400 species of bumblebees in the United States. Different. A lot of them are a little hard to tell apart from one another because they all are bigger, fuzzier, and they usually have black and white, and the entomologists, take a look at them, and it's usually they go by the pattern of
right.
of the
to us, a bumblebee is a bumblebee.
It's a bumblebee.
Is a bumblebee.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
But the bumblebees live in the ground, and they're not going to be in a hive with thousands of others, and I guess they don't worship
now,
a queen. They don't worship
the common
a queen, do they?
Bumblebee, the common bumblebee, the one you see most often, is a colony bee.
It is.
But it lives in the ground, and its colonies have 50 to 400 bees.
Well, that's really
in
small.
It. It's small compared
to
honeybees.
Do they have
a
queen?
Yes, they have a queen, too, and the queen just generally overwinters, hibernates, whereas the rest of the colony, you know, dies out. And,
okay.
And they depend on the eggs that female bee lays the next year.
To be the queen bee is wonderful, folks. No matter what species you are, if you're the queen bee, life
exactly,
is pretty good
exactly.
for you.
But they've got carpenter bees. People know about that. They don't really like to have them around their house, although a good a coating of paint generally protects your wood pretty well. And there are leaf cutter bees. They're the ones that if you have rose bushes and you see little circular, semicircular, you know, usually they look like a half moon mm-hmm. cut out of the edge. These are collecting, the leaf cutter bee collects those things, takes it down to its nest and, you know, again, uses it for feeding its young. And then there are sweat bees too. People tend to not like that too much because our native bees don't sting as aggressively as things as
honey
a honeybee would do.
But a bumblebee will sting
oh,
you.
Oh, they will, yeah.
And a sweat bee.
They will.
Why are they called sweat bees? I mean, I know what you're
talking
about.
Because they're attracted to the minerals in our sweat. And they come looking to sip a little sweat and get some of those minerals out.
Okay.
You know, so that's what they need. It's like us taking a vitamin pill or something, you know.
So we're the salt lick.
Yeah,
the sweat bee.
You got it. We're sweat bee salt licks. Absolutely.
Okay.
And bees are a member of the order Hymenoptera, which also includes wasps and includes ants.
Okay.
They're all basically kissing cousins, so to speak, even though they might look different.
Order Hymenoptera. Use that.
Hymenoptera.
Hymenoptera. Use that.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, do you have questions about bees or about your lawn or about your flowers or about your vegetables or about when fall will ever arrive?
Yeah.
You can give us a call at 223-9300, 1-800-228-WTAD. That's 1-800-288-9823. Kathy Carpenter is here to answer all of your questions, and don't wait till the last 5 minutes,
please,
because we always run out of time. So we're going to wrap this up by saying that if you want to encourage the ground dwelling bumblebee, which also needs some help, not just the honeybee, we know honeybees need help, but the ground dwelling bumblebee also needs some help. So just make sure that you have plenty of things that they like to eat, and you have some undisturbed earthen area where they can dig
mm-hmm.
and make their. Would you know
a
it
lot
if you
of
saw
times,
it?
A lot of times they will take over an abandoned rodent nest too. You know, if the mammal is out of there and not there anymore.
So can you see this? I mean, if you're walking around, will you know there's a bumblebee nest there? Or
probably
pretty,
not.
They're pretty
because
sneaky,
and you'll see, you might see a hole, a rodent hole there. And it could very well be that it's no longer the home of a rodent, but the home of a colony of bumblebees.
Okay. We'll take a break. The phone lines are lit. That's good. We'll take a real short break. We'll come back to our phone calls. Stay on the line, folks. Don't give up. We'll be right back. We're back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD, and we have all the phone lines lit, and that's what we like to see because Kathy Carpenter loves to answer your questions right here on WTAD. Thank you, caller, for your patience. What is your question for our master gardener?
Yes, I have a Rose of Sharon that has, I'd say it's about 5 years old, and it gets, and I'm not exaggerating, thousands of buds, and they just start to open and then nothing.
Nothing.
And it's been that way. We've tried cutting it back.
You mean they start opening and then they just drop off, or what?
No, they stay on there, but they just don't open.
They don't really open. Good
no.
Gravy. That's about the strangest question I've ever heard of. You've got me stumped here.
You have stumped the expert.
You have done so.
Could it be water? Are they not getting water at a critical point when they set the when that bud starts to open? Should she water them?
Well, they need water. I mean, Rose of Sharon are they're related. They're in the hibiscus family, and most members of the hibiscus family are almost grow in water practically. I mean, they like it. Wet soil almost all the time. Now, Rose of Sharon is tolerant of drier soil, but still, it probably, given its family relationship, probably does need regular watering, you know, like an inch a week or so.
Well, I've tried that, too.
You have. Okay. Well,
wow.
The only other thing that you might try is maybe this fall, because it's still green and it's still, you want to think it's going to die, okay? And and what you need to do is take a gardening spade, and cut the root system in a circle around the plant. Do it about a foot and a half from the plant.
12 to 18 inches.
Right. And that way, what you're doing is something called root pruning. And what that does to the plant is it may think that, oh, Lord, you know, the end is near, and we need to reproduce. And, of course, how they reproduce is they produce flowers. And then seeds. And normally, I mean, I don't know anything that self-seeds faster than a Rose of Sharon. So I would give that a try. Probably, I'm trying to think the best time to do that now. For the Rose of Sharon, it blooms, generally speaking, midsummer into fall. So what you might want to do is, rather than do the root pruning in the fall, that's normally what I would do if I was going to transplant a plant in the spring. Why don't you wait until it starts to leaf out in the spring, starts producing its leaves, then do the root pruning. And, you know, otherwise, you know, keep watering it and everything. You know, you don't want to kill it, but you do want it to think that it may have to really work on seeds this year.
So 12 to 18 inches away from the main stalk, and how far down should she go, 12 to 18 inches?
Probably about 12 inches
okay, so
down.
Get a longer spade, just a flat spade that you just drive down into the ground with force, and that cuts, that
correct,
separates the roots, and you're making it basically a circular ball unto itself, in which it will go into panic and think it's dying,
and
maybe it'll produce the full-blown blooms.
And you might also want to, again, in the spring, prune it back some so you don't have as there's a little bit less stress on the plant that way. But
yeah, it's making too many buds, and it's not sending any energy into making them
into fully develop and the flowers.
Right.
And it is full sun, right? Is it growing full sun for you?
Yeah.
There. Okay. Okay, that's good.
Well,
too.
Thank you very much for your phone call. This disclaimer, you may have stumped Kathy. So call us back next year and tell us
if
it works.
Exactly, please.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Oh my gosh. Here we tap this big expert. First caller out of the thing today.
What does she do to me? Embarrassment.
But I think you pulled it out. I think you thought of a good solution. Second caller, you'll have to turn that radio way down, and I'll give you time to do that because you're creating a terrible screeching in my ear. But you're up and ready to go on the Mary Griffith Show. So what is your question, please?
Well, I emptied a lily plant I had, and here is these beautiful bulbs down in there. How do I save these bulbs so I can replant them next year?
Now, when you say lily plant, I need to know what kind of type of lily. Are you talking tiger lily? Are you talking Easter lily?
Well, like an Easter lily.
Like an Easter lily.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, were you planning on moving it anyway? Now, was this from a pot?
Yes, it was in a pot.
Okay, well, go just find a place to put it outside and plant it right now.
Oh, plant the bulbs now.
Yeah, because they'll survive. I mean, an Easter lily is hardy in the ground over the winter.
Should you give it plant food?
At this point, wouldn't be a bad idea. But right now, I think that probably it was, when it was grown in the pot, it was probably fed to begin with. But it will want to start developing some of its basal roots in the fall. So make sure it's just nice, fertile, generally fertile soil, and plant it down deep, probably twice the depth that the bulb is high. So if the bulb is like 5 inches, go down 10 inches and put the bulb in.
Okay. Also, why did my hydrangea not bloom this year? The plants look beautiful. But I never got any bloom on.
Well, let me see. First thing to ask is, are they planted in basically full sun?
Well, partial sun.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the other thing, is it near your lawn where, like, say, for example, it might be, it might have a lot of nitrogen fertilizer runoff from the lawn itself?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, because over-fertilizing with nitrogen fertilizer is, you're guaranteed hardly to get any flowers.
Well, my plants are beautiful, but I just never...
Oh, yeah, because the nitrogen is taken up by the leaves, and the leaves are happy as clams and see absolutely no reason to waste any energy on flowers.
Yeah,
that's what happens. Okay, very good. So my next guess would be maybe they're getting just a little bit too much shade. Perhaps the trees that were nearby have gotten bigger or provided, you know, more of an overhang, and they're not getting quite enough sun. That could be partially. Did you prune them back at all this year?
No.
Okay,
I didn't.
Good. That because they some hydrangeas, and it's hard to tell, have a habit of blooming on new growth. And some are old growth and some are a mixture. But if they bloom only on new growth and you cut them back in the spring, you might have kind of gotten rid of all your buds.
Oh, I need not to prune it back then.
At least unless you know for sure, you know, what kind of wood the hydrangea blooms on.
Okay.
And there's so many different species and cultivars that it's hard for me to tell without knowing what the plant is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
but give it a try and good luck. They sometimes can be pretty temperamental.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, and we wish you the best as your garden continues to grow. We have another caller. Waited patiently. Kathy Carpenter is waiting to hear your question, and hopefully she's got an answer.
Yeah.
You're on the air on WTAD. What's your question?
My question is, I have two maple trees in my front yard, mm-hmm. and every fall they're just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But this fall, the leaves are small, they're just dried up, and they just fall off, and, you know, they're just like dead.
Yeah.
I hope next year they can recover.
Did it turn colors earlier when we had that cold snap?
Mm-mm. Just a little touch here and there maybe, but...
Is it too dry? Is the dry?
That would be my first guess, is that they got drought stressed and did not get... How old are these trees? Are they giant trees or smaller?
They've been here... When I moved here, like 40-something years ago, they were real tiny, but now they're big.
Big, uh-huh.
But they're not the big old leafy soft maples. They're those hard maples that have such beautiful leaves.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know what you mean. It could be that they're drought-stressed. It could be, since they were young when you moved in 40 years ago, they could be just getting a little old, you know?
Well, last year they were fine.
They were fine last year. Okay. Well, my first guess would be drought.
I kind of feel maybe it is a drought.
Mm-hmm. So pamper them a little bit this fall, because they still, their root system is alive and well under the ground, and it still needs to get the water, you know.
Yeah, there's no way I can water them, but
don't you have a hose?
I think they'll recover on their own.
Don't
maybe.
You have a hose? You don't have a
short one, but these trees are really big.
Yeah. Mm. Well, but we've been in a drought now for 2 years, so.
Yeah.
But if you don't have a hose, it'll reach out to them. You're in trouble, because there's no way to. He's just putting a 5-gallon bucket of water on him is not going to do it.
Okay. Pray for precipitation.
Pray for rain.
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. I would like to follow up by saying, she said, well, they were just fine a year ago. Every person's obituary that I read on the morning on WTAD, they were just fine year ago. And then something happened. Your phone calls are welcome, and now's the time to call.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, but you'll be the first caller up if you dial right now, 223-9300, 1-800-228-9823. That's 1-800-228-WTAD. Kathy Carpenter is my guest today. The third Thursday of every month, we always have a master gardener on, and Kathy is usually that guest, not always, but she is so knowledgeable, and we have another caller. So
okay.
We always take our callers first, so we're going to put them at the top of the queue. Good morning. Thanks for your interest. What's on your mind?
It isn't a fall thing, but I wonder why... my elephant ears take so long to get started in the spring.
Well, elephant ears are a tropical plant, for one thing. And now, do you put them in every year, or do you, from a plant you've purchased, or how do you manage to get them?
Yeah, when I dig them up, I split them up and, put them in sand or something to keep them moist or whatever.
Right. That is the thing to do with
them,
for sure.
Plant them. And they're so late getting started. So this year I thought, well, I'll get a head start. I put several of them in pots, you know, and start them early. And it didn't make any difference.
They just were slow.
They should be in full, great, big by now, and some are. But the others, just were so late starting. I just wondered why.
Well,
thing for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would guess that is probably the case, because their native habitat is pretty much, they grow year round, and so they have plenty of time to truly establish. Now in the nursery trade, they will start them in a warm greenhouse and provide them with a culture that is very like what they have in their native lands. So I think that's part of it. The other thing is that they love moisture, and so they would prefer to be in a place where they have, in fact, they could probably have a swamp, and they would be very happy about that. So
that's
the other thing. So plenty of moisture and really warm conditions when they first get
is
back
there a
into the ground.
Fertilizer you can use for them, or
I don't think that their
it's
slowness
the warm.
Is
it's the warmth is fertilizer. That's the problem, not the fertilizer. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. You know, it never hurts to feed a plant. That's for sure. And it's be worth trying. You know, you might even put in, use a fertilizer that is a little bit more like a grass fertilizer, that's a little higher in nitrogen, because that's basically what they are. They leaves.
They're just leaves, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
But
okay.
It's the environment.
Thank
I'm afraid.
You.
Maybe she has pygmy elephants, and they only have pygmy elephant ears. Maybe there's. Did you ever think of that, Kathy? No.
Well.
Kathy said no in all of her training from the University of Illinois. She never had that happen. Thank you for your phone call. We really appreciate it. You want to talk a little bit about some.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, it's going to be 95 degrees today, folks. Go out and plant something. Kathy says it's not too late,
It's
really.
It's not too late to plant, particularly in your vegetable garden. Plant the things that are going to tolerate the we hope, oncoming cool weather. Garlic bulbs. I don't buy garlic anymore. I plant the little cloves of the garlic that I got one clove from the year before and plant them, and I have enough garlic for the rest of the year come spring when they I harvest them in early summer, usually end of June, and they have then lettuce, spinach, radishes grow so fast that you can always plant them, and lettuce and spinach, once that temperature begins to cool down, they love that. So I put those in the garden, too. You can have some late salad material.
Okay.
That would work.
You can keep on going. Well, Kathy, everybody has a question for you today.
Oh, good.
So we've got lots of phone callers, and we love it. Good morning. You're on the air with Kathy Carpenter, our master gardener.
Hi. I've been unable to listen because I had a phone call, but I would like to know if I can cut down the stalks from my lilies now.
The what from your, I'm sorry, the stalks, the lily stalks?
Yeah.
Do they still have green leaves on them?
Oh, they're not looking very good.
You can probably get away with it then. I just like those leaves to be available to nourish the bulbs as long as possible. But if they're beginning to get a little yellowish, a little spotty, you can.
Laying over. And,
sure thing.
You know, they're just. They're not looking very good.
Okay. Well, I think you can get away with it then.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You have permission from the master gardener. Don't do anything without permission from Kathy Carpenter. Good morning. Thank you for your phone call. You're on WTAD. What's your question?
Yes. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
Please come to when I was, of course, this has been 50 years ago, when I was in high school and college. Seems like we talk more about the environment and how to treat it. Now, here in the Midwest, we're all tied to the farmer in some way. When I was a kid, I put up hay for the farmer. That's how I got to know him. And right now, it's harvest time, and we all like to see good crops. But what we don't talk about anymore is pesticides and herbicides. How much we should use, this president, he don't like the EPA and he loves to deregulate. But do you think we'll ever have a discussion on how much we should use and,
Okay.
Of course. That's something that everybody should be concerned about. But believe it or not, the worst pesticides and herbicides and excessive fertilizer users are homeowners with their lawns and our golf courses. The farmers have been very much aware for a while now of how important it is to be judicious in your use of those things.
And I'm sure Jim Dewey, our farm director, would chime right in and say that the farmers have to use that land over and over and over again. The water supply on the land, they have to use over and over and over again. So they're being a lot more conscientious and putting the least amount of herbicide and pesticide on to get a profitable crop. They still use the items unless it's organic. But it is. It's the golf courses, the homeowners. I mean, our lawn is beautiful.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we pay somebody to come and dump a whole bunch of chemicals on it 3 times a year at least, sometimes 4. I want a beautiful lawn. Now, if I really thought that I was killing, you know, Curtis Creek or Cedar Creek where we live,
yeah,
I'd stop. But I trust that my man, Kramer Lawn Care, he is certified to put on these amounts, and he knows how much to put on so that it's not running off.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't put it on a day when it's going to rain the next day, for example.
Well,
so, but
true,
you know, it's
true.
Interesting. He says we don't talk enough about the environment, but the Pope last year issued this big encyclical about the environment. So if you want to read about the environment, I don't think some of us want to talk about the environment because we don't want to we want to drink out of our styrofoam cup, and we want to do
the stuff
the
that
stuff
might
that
take to
we
do
want
that,
to blame
yeah.
farmers and their big feedlots and their big soybean operations. We want to blame them for all the problems with the environment when we have to turn and look in the mirror and realize that we're probably the biggest problem. We don't have time to get to that last caller, but I do want, Kathy, you've got less than a minute. What can you say in 30 seconds that will get us up and going on this 95-degree day to plant something in our fall garden? Radishes, garlic,
and
lettuce
and spinach, yes. Get them started. And
Should we till in the fall when we're done and till it all up and get it ready?
Yeah, once you've harvested everything, you know, get a head start on spring by just getting the soil ready, and maybe you'll have less trouble with the spring weeding when you have to get out and get the garden there.
Good luck with that. Well, our tomatoes went crazy this year, and I don't know why, because I don't think we did anything different this year. I did water a little bit more because I was afraid you were talking about the drought. So, folks, save your trees. Don't be afraid to water, even an older tree. Give it a trickle in the hose. Give it a trickle and keep it on for a couple of hours, and get that root system really saturated.
And especially pay close attention to your evergreens, because they have to be good and moist, because they keep their little needles the whole winter.
And we want them to be bright and shiny when Santa Claus comes. Thank you, Kathy Carpenter. It's been my pleasure. Tomorrow we'll talk about a day of prayer in Quincy. Maybe we better pray for some rain.